Coming from a man with sausages of fat beginning to bulge over his collar, this was pretty cool, but I was too busy gulping down my fear to mind. Presently, Dakota arrived, looking even more snake-like than he had the previous night, and when Bismarck explained what he was to do, you could see the rascal's mouth start to water. "You must be exact to the inch," says Bismarck. "Look here." He stood in front of me, drawing from his pocket the little miniature he'd shown me last night, glancing at it and then at me and frowning. "You see, Hazeran, so and so. Now, the crayon." And to my horror, he took a fat black pencil, which Kraftstein held out, and with great care began to mark on the skin of my head the places where the cuts were to go. It was the final obscene touch that brought the bile up into my mouth, so that I almost spewed at him. He stood there, his face close to mine, hissing gently through his teeth, and sketching away on my crawling flesh as though it had been a blackboard. I shuddered away, and he growled at me to be still. I was paralyzed. I don't think that of all the beastly things that man ever did, or all the terror he caused me, that there was anything as loathsome as that casual marking of my skin for Dakota to cut at. There's only one word for it. It was German. And if you don't understand what I mean, thank God for it. At last he was done, and Kraftstein could arm us for the Schlager play. It seemed horrible to me at the time, but looking back from the safety of old age, I can see that it is more childish than anything else. For all their pride in taking scars to impress everyone with how manly they are, the Germans are damn careful not to cause themselves any serious damage. Kraftstein fitted big metal caps onto the crowns of our heads. They were equipped with spectacles of iron in front to protect the eyes and nose, and there were heavy padded stocks to go round our necks. Then there was a quilted body armour to buckle round our middles, with flaps to cover the thighs, and a padded bandage to wrap round the right arm from the wrist to the shoulder. By the time we were fully equipped, I felt like Pantaloon with dropsy. It was so ridiculous that I almost forgot to be afraid. Even when the Schlager was put into my hands, it looked such a ludicrous weapon that I couldn't take it seriously. It was more than a yard long, with a triangular blade, and had a huge metal bowl at the hilt to protect the hand. It must have been about a foot across. "The soup plate of honour," says Bismarck. "You have used a sabre, I suppose?" "Ask your man about that when we've finished," says I, blustering with a confidence I didn't feel. Dakota was swishing his Schlager in a frighteningly professional way. "Very good," says Bismarck. "You will observe that your opponent's head is covered, as is yours, at all points except for the cheeks and lower temples. These are your targets and his. I may tell you that with Dakota you are as likely to hit those targets as I was to strike Mr. Cully. You may cut, but not thrust. Do you understand? I shall call you to begin and to desist." He stepped back, and I found myself facing Dakota across the chalk floor. Rudy and Grafstein had taken their places along the walls, but Miss Mark stayed within a couple of yards of us, armed with a Schlager to strike up our blades, if need be. Dakota advanced, saluting with a flourish. In his padding, he looked like some kind of sausage doll, but his eyes were bright and nasty through the spectacles. I didn't salute, but came on guard sabre fashion, right hand up above my head, and blade slanting down before my face. "Salute!" snaps Bismarck. "Pish to you," says I, guessing that it would offend his fine Teutonic spirit to ignore the formalities. I was getting cocky, you see, because all this paraphernalia had convinced me that the business wasn't really serious at all. I'm not a sabre expert. A strong swordsman rather than a good one was how the master-at-arms in the 11th Hussars had described me. And if I have to use one, I'd rather it wasn't in single combat, but in a melee where you can hang about on the outskirts, roaring your heart out and waiting for an opponent with his back turned. However, it seemed to me now that I ought to be able to guard the unprotected areas that Dakota would be cutting at. He came on guard, the blades grated between us, and then he twitched his wrist, quick as light, right and left, aiming deft little cuts at the sides of my head. But flashes, nobody's fool, I turned my wrist with his, and caught the cuts on my own blade.